Cold frame is a short structure, not too high, around 1 foot tall,
yeah.
and cover a garden bed, usually with glass or plexiglass, and where you got your vegetables over the winter.
Right.
Hoop houses, on the contrary, is what we do here is a frame, a wooden frame, the size that sits on top of the garden bed,
mm-hmm.
and then the hoops goes from one side to the other, bending, and it shouldn't be more than 2 feet tall.
Right.
So with 2 feet tall, we still can squeeze our head underneath and do some gardening.
Yeah.
With a cold frame, it's not happening with that. Cold frame is very short. It's just to keep the nice environment around the vegetables. But
so with the cold frame, would you lift that off when you need to do some work?
Yes, usually it's kind of a window that you lift it.
Okay. Yeah.
Do your work, put it back.
Right.
With the hoop houses, everything is covered with plastic, very tough plastic, and the ends are open. So we can open an end, get our body there, do the work, clean. And close the
and it seems like the hoop houses would be a little easier and less expensive to build than the cold frame.
Correct. Yeah. So hoop houses, as I mentioned, is a frame. We use 2x2 lumber, mm-hmm. which is sturdy, and then we drill holes each 1.5 feet, and we use metal rods around 96 inches long, so which is gives us the right distance, 2 feet. Highest,
right.
in the highest bend, and it covers 4 feet wide.
Right, so and that creates the hoop.
It creates the hoop, and we put 3 hoops for 4 feet of length,
mm-hmm.
and then we cover with plastic, and the plastic is stapled into the wooden frame.
Right.
So many times I have seen just plastic covered on top of the structure and hold it by stones, hold it by pieces of wood. A strong wind, we just lifted that, and then we are looking for the plastic. So what we do is staple the plastic into the frame. And again, over the years doing this, we realized like it's not enough just stapling the mm-hmm. plastic into the wood. Still, like a strong wind will get underneath and lift it and rip the whole plastic along the staples.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the Canadian solution, duct tape. So we staple 3 staples to hold the plastic into the frame, and then we put a section of duct tape, and over the duct tape we staple around 2 to 3 fingers. That's how I use it in the garden, 2 to 3 fingers and a staple.
Right.
That the structure of the duct tape is kind of a mesh, a fabric underneath,
yeah.
and that offers extra resistance, so
right.
the plastic stays
really resists the sort of tearing that
the
might
tearing.
Happen.
Yeah, so no tearing because it's so strong, and we fix one side, and fixing the second side, we just pull tight the plastic from all the directions and do the same process.
Right.
That is how we manage, and by having this tense plastic all across, there is a small little pockets or no pockets at all where water will collect. Again, water will puddle, that turns into ice and gets heavy as well. If the snow pulls in that pocket, rains, the snow gets heavy and the wall structure collapse.
Right.
So for envisioning winter care is making sure that the hoop houses are nice built and then when the snow comes, usually we have snow in mid-January, and that is when we go and shake those hoop houses. So there's no shades, and still light can go through, and inside, although it's not fully tight,
mm-hmm.
air still can get inside. We still have the greenhouse effect working.
Right.
So just sunlight passing through, warming the soil as a dark object, that's all. To convert radiant energy into heat energy,
mm-hmm.
warming up this little air that is underneath the hoop houses, and just half a degree makes a huge difference for the plants growing in there.
That's excellent. Yeah, it's often surprising. You wouldn't think that just a little protection mm-hmm. from that airflow can really make a big difference in that temperature.
Yeah,
and of course, I guess the other thing is it will protect the garden and the plants from wind, which can be. Well, we all have heard about wind chill. You know the difference that if the garden and the plants are in the wind, that's one thing. But they're protected from the wind, so they're not getting that wind chill factor in the same way.
Yes, and then when these very nice sunny days looking like a spring, what we do, we just open the hoop house so air goes through and bends.
Yeah.
even with all this venting the hoop houses, keeping care, still mold tends to grow inside the plants, inside the underneath the hoop house on the plants. So the maintenance of winter is go and remove that, remove those infected pieces of plant, leaves, keep nice and tidy the soil. We don't work the soil during this winter period because although there is not much water, the water still freezes, getting some ice crystals, and you can see the soil all bumpy. We just don't touch the soil. We just leave it there. The plants are trying to work with the water that is in the soil. No need to go and continue working and potentially destroying the root system of the plant.
I would imagine, too, that working the soil, because, I mean, the soil itself insulates itself, right? So turning up and would expose a lot of stuff that was under the ground at a nice temperature, all of a sudden exposed to the air, and now it's cold and too cold.
Yes, right? Yes.
You're you kind of disrupt the soil ecology for winter.
Correct. Yeah, the soil has all his living things at a different depth, and just by working on it, we are bringing something that from the bottom to the surface and killing it. So we don't work the soil. We don't water because we expect with this weather all the soil be moist throughout. We protect the plant with the soil. We open the hoop houses to vent during good weather. And then what else we do? One thing that as well I have done in the past is add leaves. So add a layer of leaves on top of the soil and then on top of that the hoop house.
Right.
So it's like extra protection to the soil. But what happened is that the leaves in nature are designed to decompose during winter.
Yeah.
But having those leaves, a layer of leaves, underneath a hoop house, they won't decompose.
Right, because they're not getting wet enough.
They're not exposed to the weather, and they dry out, and literally it's become like I have myself giving extra work, because when spring comes, the first thing is remove that layer of mulch, of leaves. I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. It's like, I give myself extra work. So nowadays, I try to avoid putting a layer of mulch, leaf mulch, before putting the hoop house.
But you would put the mulch down on plots or boxes that you're not using over the winter.
That we would call open beds, yes. Yeah. And that open bed where there is no cover, I'll be a 2 inches thick layer of mulch, leaf mulch goes in there, so it protects it. So these things what we have experienced. And then when the snow arrives, you need to clean the snow from the plastic. Use your hands or a small brush, but no cutting objects, any sharp objects, because we can slash the plastic. And then we are in a, how am I going to fix this?
Right.
So that the second nature in winter is carrying a roll of duct tape, translucent duct tape, to patch up all these holes that just by our mistakes, we just slash the plastic, so we need to cover that. Right. Again, that is to protect the wind getting underneath and further ripping the plastic.
Excellent. Well, that's good advice for this time of year, getting ready for winter. When would you take down the hoop houses in the spring?
So hoop houses will go mid-October.
Yeah.
And we go all the way until May.
Oh, okay.
We remove the hoop houses when the night temperature is around 12 degrees Celsius.
Right.
So at the moment, night temperature is already 5-6, very cold. So we keep it until it's 12 degrees Celsius. So beginning of May.
Right.
We slowly open the hoop house. So we roll up the ends of the hoop house. Mm-hmm. So air flows through first. Right. So it's kind of a gentle introduction to the cold weather for the plants not to have a shock suddenly. Because plants growing underneath the hoop houses are very tender. There is no wind, so there's no need to develop a strong leaves on a strong stem, and any little wind, they will just damage the plant.
Right. Well, I can see with the hoop houses in place for 6 or 7 months almost, the maintenance and just taking care of them that you talked about is going to be really important, because that's actually quite a long time for, you know, because ultimately, I mean, they're quite durable, but they're also can be quite fragile, right?
It can be quite fragile, yeah. So, I mean, in particular, when they are not well fixed to the garden bed, a strong wind is lifted and it goes tumbling and gets destroyed. So, that has to be very well fixed to the garden bed. Plastic, we use as a thin plastic, not the hard 0.5 mils or 0.6 mils. We just use a plastic that you can lay on the floor when you are painting. That's simple plastic. It doesn't need to be heavy. But again, if you don't, when we are painting the snow, we are not careful, we just can rip the plastic.
Right.
And maintenance, making sure that the airflow, making sure that there is no any part of the plant infected with fungus has to be removed, or with mold has to be removed.
Right. Yeah. All right. Thanks so much, Pablo. That's great advice.
Yeah. So if you're planning to build hoop houses out there this time, make sure that the plastic is well nice and tense, and you can use that tape before stapling the plastic into the frame.
All right. Thank you so much. Pablo Vimas is the gardens manager for Embark Sustainability, and he'll be back next week with some more advice for your garden. Tell us, Pablo, how can people find out more about Embark?
So Embark is a non-profit organization managed by SFU students. We are based in the Student Union building. And we do a lot of activities regarding to food justice and climate equity. Mm-hmm. And gardening is part of the food justice. You can find more about our work during this academic year through our social media channels at Embark Sustainability, or visiting our website, embarksustainability.org, or attending to our community kitchens. The next community kitchen is October the 29th. So don't forget to register if you're interested to join us. And as well, visiting us in our office here at the Student Union in the room 1310.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo. Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. We'll talk to you again next week.
See you next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Most pilots are trained to avoid extreme weather. But when a hurricane forms over the ocean, an elite crew of pilots, engineers, and meteorologists from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration flies right into the heart of the storm.
So what will probably seem like the bumpiest commercial flight you've ever been on for us may be just a normal day at the office.
John Zoislak is flight director at NOAA's Aircraft Operations Center, which leads the Hurricane Hunters. Starting several days before a hurricane makes landfall, the team runs carefully planned missions into the storm. They fly on rugged turboprop aircraft equipped with Doppler radar systems and other instruments that measure wind speed, humidity, air pressure, and more.
We're in the actual storm, the turbulence, the rainfall, the heavy winds and rain, to really get those really, really high-resolution measurements that we need to understand the storm.
The information they gather is then used to improve forecasts and identify vulnerable communities, so emergency managers can help the public prepare.
We fly for the public. We fly to save lives. We fly to protect property.
So as climate change causes more extreme weather, the Hurricane Hunters are collecting important data that can help keep people safe. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
So, Peter, you've had a bit of a revelation of sorts.
Yes. This is a pre-recorded. We pre-recorded this on Thursday afternoon.
Because Monday's a holiday.
And the whole building's closed off.
Yeah, we can't even come in if we want to.
So, I knew I was going to have this, and I did from the broadcast on Monday. It's going to be 2 weeks since I was talking, how I was convinced that there's no link between the vaccines and also autism. So, but then I've always been kind of iffy about the whole COVID thing.
Mm-hmm. And you've never been vaccinated, or you?
I've been vaccinated years ago in childhood for polio. And
no, but I mean, you didn't do the COVID vaccine back in the day.
I didn't. But there's a podcast that's pretty good. The name of the podcast is If Books Could Kill. That's the name of it.
Yep.
It's been operating since November 2022.
Yep.
And they do, by their definition, those airport books, you know, those things. Like the first one they did was Freakonomics.
Right.
And they said, well, this is kind of ridiculous. The vice president's book,
Hillbilly Elegy.
Yeah, they
which
tore they
made
that
into a movie. I haven't read the book nor seen the movie.
So what they did, and actually, this afternoon I saw, like, I heard 3 hours, which was all right. They know how to do a podcast, and it was on the Lab Leak. I don't think it was on a book. It was at first you had the...
So we're talking about COVID and the origins of COVID and the many things that people think and wonder about that.
Yes, just wait a minute. I want to get my... Oh, here it goes. I don't think that this was a book. This was... sometimes I just do it on a general topic. It was the lab... Okay. The lab leak goes mainstream. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm convinced now it comes from some animal in the actual web, in the wet market, mm-hmm. from what they said. Now, when you sort of say, well, I don't know if it came from that wet market, this strange animal, then what it could be, oh, they did it on purpose, they did it on, who knows, or we shouldn't be involved with the research they were doing. Now, one thing they brought up, and if you go to the podcast of Books Could Kill and you go to the episode, The Lab Leak Goes Mainstream, you can, yep. the full argument. But what they're saying is that people thought it was a bit of a coincidence that there was a lab there mm-hmm. in that city. But they were saying there's lab. That's not the only city in mainland China that has a lab like that.
Right.
And actually it was the wet market that was a bit special. mm-hmm. with their strange animals. And actually, it just sort of seemed to make sense. I won't go into all the scenarios you could think if you don't go with the wet market. Yeah. But I was a bit, I said, well, we don't know, you know. We don't know if that's the case. But I'm convinced now that that is the case.
So what changed your mind?
Just the argument they brought forth and the...
Are you able to sort of give us a... I'm sure it's, you know, that's a ton of information there, but are you able to give us a sort of summary of
it? It's just that they were not doing that, research at that city mm-hmm. on the actual virus that actually happened.
Right.
So it's a different virus that actually came from some animal than they were actually doing research in.
Right.
In that city. So, I mean, there was a variety of things. No, it just makes... this is the first I've seen it because I heard about it on the website. Mm-hmm. So Donald Trump now has a special website, Lab Leak, True Origins of COVID. So he's sort of... you can go to that. I put Donald Trump Lab Leak website. He's got right. one, a slick website, which is seems to be nonsense. But
is this like a White House website? Or
yes, it seems to be. We can't. Mm-hmm. it's I know, and it's yeah. So it seems kind of bad. The other thing, it's sort of he was the one who had. It was called Project Warp Speed mm-hmm. for getting the vaccine.
Yeah.
And now he's sort of contradicting himself like Big Brother in 1984 a little bit.
Yeah, because, you know, he was in office. COVID sort of first came December 2019, really became yeah. into public prominence early in that 2020. And, of course, everything kind of went into lockdown, so to speak, in March of 2020. Which meant there was like 10 months left, in, 10 or 9 or, well, 10 or 11 months almost left in his term when all that happened. And one of the things the government did, and you could, whether it's directly Donald Trump's, you know, credit or not, was start this Project Warp Speed to put a load of resources into developing a vaccine as fast as possible. And one of the angles they were working at was the mRNA vaccine, which ended up being the ones that seemed to have the most effect.
Well, what happened was, so he wouldn't take votes away from Trump. There was the agreement with Robert Kennedy Jr. that, quit your campaign and I'll make you, what's the specific post that he has, Magnus? Health Secretary.
Yeah.
So he wrote that reason that happened was just to get him out of the campaign. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Donald Trump did it.
Yeah. And that was in the most recent campaign now in the
2024
election.
So with, him backing up Robert Kennedy Jr., he sort of contradicting himself, because he did Project Warp Speed, or got it going, and now he's saying, I think Robert Kennedy Jr. is a wonderful guy. And so it's just, it's complete chaos.
Yeah.
And now I'm kind of, because I just before a bit we're recording this, saw the website's got lab leak, which I'm going to just go, they had very good arguments saying, as I said, it's just that they weren't really researching it at mm-hmm. that lab, that at the lab. Wuhan.
That they weren't researching the
but the strain or whatever.
Yeah, the virus that actually ended up becoming COVID.
That came
they were
from
doing
some
something else.
Strange animal. I think I'm just going to maybe go on. Okay, I was on the wrong side of history. In a major way, I guess, because they have, after that one, they have two other things that I heard. It was about an hour each. They were just on general, whether the lockdowns helped and so on, other issues. I'm kind of still scared of the COVID vaccine. That's just an emotional thing. Mm-hmm. For now, it'll take a while. Yeah. Maybe I won't. I will see what happens. But I'm just going to go on like how it... I think a lot of players just came across as being so arrogant during the whole thing. I mean, for example, Justin Trudeau on TV and radio every day being very sanctimonious. It kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know what it... Maybe you liked it? You were a Justin Trudeau fan?
I don't know if I was a Justin Trudeau fan. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, mostly they had, yeah, I mean, Justin Trudeau was making announcements fairly frequently, and then they had the federal...
It was every day.
Yeah.
It was every day for a while.
Yeah. And then, but they also had the, you know, the federal, it was the public health officer, the national public health officer. I do feel, well, you had the same thing here in BC where, you know, I mean, I think Dr. Bonnie Henry, you know, led most of the information sharing, but Adrian Dix as the minister, not John Horgan, who was the premier at the time, but Adrian Dix as the minister was part of the announcements most days. I mean, one thing I liked about it at the time, which wasn't a political thing, just the fact that they really let the science talk and didn't try and politicize things.
It didn't sound that way to me, but so be it. It just here's one thing, was that they wanted an elementary school that was closed down to be opened up for people to live that were homeless, and that was shut down. That was not allowed to happen.
Right.
The other thing is during the time I remember, I would take the bus. I'm at the Lougheed area, so I think I would often go up to SFU and take the bus downtown, and you're looking at the main Hastings area. People were all over the street, and you're thinking to myself, well, they're not dying. I mean, this, I'm just telling what my thoughts were, not saying how I was thinking at the time. I mean, why aren't these people just dying on the streets the way that they're going on about it?
Mm-hmm.
And still that the optics to me are kind of bad. Like, why wouldn't you just say, okay, we're not using elementary school, we'll have the people be there for a while.
Right.
But they weren't doing that. So that's it. Maybe we'll just, maybe if you have any last thoughts, Magnus, we'll maybe end on this.
Sure. Well, you know, I think it's interesting that, you know, one of the things about conspiracy theories, and of course there are real conspiracies in the world. Not every conspiracy theory is, you know, crazy or false, but I think, you know, with what's behind a lot of, you know, conspiracy theories is, which seems to be a human thing, a desire for a simple answer to what might be a complex question, or a simple answer that seems to suggest we have control over a situation we don't have control over. And one of the things, for instance, about things like disease and pandemic is we do still have a lot less control over it than we do, right? And the idea that this could happen anytime, anywhere, just because that's how nature works, is scary, and perhaps scarier than the idea that there was some, you know, dastardly work going on in a lab, right? You know, because most, you know, when you look at all, you know, same thing with, you know, various ideas about the cause of you know, the 9/11, where it's like, well, it's much easier to think that the government just pulled off this thing than some random terrorist from halfway around the world were able to create.
Well, I was never a truther.
No, I know, I know.
It didn't make sense to me, because it just was kind of direct Al-Qaeda. Yeah. They did the cleverness of getting that building down. I didn't quite understand where the truthers were coming from, actually.
Yeah, and I'm not suggesting you were. I'm just saying it's another example of where people are looking for some sort of controllable cause for why something happened, as opposed to, you know, something that can't be controlled. And I think things that can't be controlled are really scary.
Anyway, so
all right,
we'll leave it at this. I'll be live in person next week.
All right. See you next time, guys.
Okay, that was, how long was that?
Wandering Rhythms, Mondays from noon to two.
Join us in a weekly sample of music from planet Earth.
The strangest mixtape you will ever hear.
Desert blues.
Balkan punk.
Latin funk.
African psych.
Pigeon rap.
And anything and everything else you can imagine. equally represented by all continents.
Because good music is universal.
Wandering Rhythms.
Mondays at noon on CJSF 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! From